We'll get the video. You'll get the video.
Would you like a audio report?
Nah, I can rip the audio out of the video. That's no problem. Okay, today we're in Ruth chapter 3. Boaz shows great integrity in this chapter by not having sexual relations with Ruth. He was also concerned with how people would see Ruth if they caught her in this position. Boaz's character is important for this story. And I've given you a little outline of chapter 3. Ruth listening, obeying, believing, receiving, and waiting. Who would like to do through verses 1 through 6 to read for us? Okay, Rob.
One day, Ruth's mother-in-law, Naomi, said to her, "My daughter, I must find a home for you, where you will be well provided for. Now Boaz, with whose women you have worked, is a relative of ours. Tonight, he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. Wash, put on perfume, and get dressed in your best clothes. Then go down to the threshing floor. But don't let him know you are there until he has finished eating and drinking. When he lies down, note the place where he is lying. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down. He will tell you what to do." "I will do whatever you say," Ruth answered. So she went down to the threshing floor and did everything her mother-in-law told her to do.
Okay, thanks. If you haven't already, be sure to meet Rob and Terry. They're newly destinites. I guess, is that how you say it?
I don't know. We have to tell them.
They don't know. So anyway, they're new to the area. Put it like that. So let's unpack this. Verse 1, what did Naomi say her desire was for Ruth? Find her a home where she would be well provided for. So I guess Naomi was looking out for Ruth's future. She didn't necessarily want her living with her the rest of her life when she was still young and of age to marry and bear children, that sort of thing. Do you think Naomi meant literally to finding a house for her to live in, or figuratively in finding a husband to care for her? See, all of the above. Yeah, it could have been either one or both. So, which we don't know for sure. But
she would have been happy with either both.
Yeah, either one would have been fine, I think. So what was the winnowing and threshing process? Anyone know what winnowing and threshing is?
Use the winds to separate the wheat barley from the chaff.
Okay, how do they do that?
By beating it apart.
Okay.
Sticks.
Okay.
Big pork sticks.
Okay. You know what the big pork sticks were called?
Winnowing pork.
There you go. But another word is flail. F-A-L-A-I-L. Call it flail. Anybody else want to add to that? Yes, they did. That was part of the step that David left out. After the wheat was broken up, then they would take this winnowing fork and throw the wheat up in the air, and the wind would actually blow it.
Chaff away.
I was doing good remembering winnowing fork. I didn't even know the name of it when I started saying that.
Yeah, they let the wind blow it, like David said, but that's how they do it. They throw it up in the air after it's been crushed, so the wind would actually do the separating.
Hey, Lynn, another thing about the barley harvest was it was how they identified the beginning of the year. In fact, God had told them that when the first new moon after the barley harvest would be the first day of the year.
Oh, okay.
So the new moon, in other words, when it's black, as soon as that first sliver appeared, that was day one of the first year after the barley harvest.
Okay. I knew that the Jewish calendar was different than what we go by today. I didn't know exactly how the and part of that has to do with Easter too, where Easter falls.
Yeah, that's how they determine that is because 2 weeks after the first day of Nisan 1 is what it's called. 2 weeks after that is Passover.
Yeah.
Which is always a full moon.
But it's not like a set date that varies between some of these moon cycles.
No, it's a set date, but it was a Jewish calendar date.
Yeah.
Which would be Nisan 14.
Okay. Any other comments about the winnowing and threshing process? Afterwards, after this was done, the men would sleep around the grain to protect it from thieves, often with their heads towards the grain and their feet out like spokes of a wheel. We find this example in 1 Samuel 23 is where that comes from. So after they crushed the grain, separated it, kind of put it in the middle of whatever, and then the men would sleep with their heads kind of toward the grain and the feet sticking out. That's how I'm interpreting it. So
it wasn't just two-legged thieves, it was also four-legged.
Yeah, exactly.
True.
So verse 3, what did Naomi tell Ruth to do before going down to the threshing floor?
Wash and perfume yourself.
Yeah. Clean up, put on perfume, and change clothes. So why would this have been important?
To be attractive.
Yeah. And what would...
He's not going to smell good. She will. That's what I was thinking. He'll be a huge one. The only one.
Well, she's laying by his feet, too, you know.
Well, Naomi, this is my comment. Naomi wanted to make Ruth desirable to Boaz since he had only seen her dirty, sweaty, and at work in the fields. So that was the first impression was she was, you know, she's a hard worker. We knew that. We talked about that last week. But she probably gets hot, sweaty, dirty, you know, all of the above. And Naomi was suggesting she clean up. So that was the point. Do we know the name of the perfume?
Irresistible.
Irresistible?
Frankincense? I don't know.
We don't know. This is just a kind of a little joke question. According to J. Vernon McGee, it's called Midnight in Moab.
I was going to say Jacquard Noir by Moab or something.
Yeah. Probably was some sort of essential oil, though, because that's what they used back then.
She also, this is the same thing that brides did.
Yeah, yeah. So what was Ruth to do when she went to where Boaz was sleeping? Verse 4.
Uncover his feet.
Uncover his feet. Remove the cloak or blanket covering his feet so they would be exposed to the cold. And then verse 5, what was Ruth's attitude toward Naomi's instructions?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah,
do whatever you say.
Ready to follow whatever she said. I'll do whatever you say, one person says, or one translation says. We're going to break down that removing the cloak from the feet here in just a minute. So actually, I didn't dwell on that right now. Any other comments or questions from verses 1 through 6? Okay, who has 7 through 12? Deborah.
When Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he went over to lie down at the far end of the grain pile. Ruth approached quietly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. In the middle of the night, something startled the man. He turned, and there's a woman lying at his feet. "Who are you?" he asked. "I'm your servant Ruth," she said. "Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a guardian redeemer of our family." "The Lord bless you, my daughter," he replied. "This kindness is greater than that which you showed earlier. You have not run after the younger men, whether rich or poor. And now, my daughter, don't be afraid. I will do for you all you ask. All the people of my town know that you are a woman of noble character. Although it is true that I am a guardian redeemer of our family, there is another who is more closely related than I."
Okay. So in the middle of the night was about what time of the night? Do we know?
The darkest point of the night.
Which is what?
2 to 4.
Depends on the calendar.
It's no moon.
Depends on the moon.
Oh, that's true. There was no moon.
Anywhere from midnight to about 2 or 3 o'clock, generally. A lot of commentaries said midnight, but we don't know for sure. And what was Boaz startled to find?
Somebody's right there.
Yeah. Somebody right there beside him. And even though it's not clear what actually woke him up, possibly the cold air.
Cold feet.
Or it could have been cold feet. But something got his attention and he woke up. What did uncovering the feet signify? Anybody know Jewish history well enough? A request for marriage. What did you say, David?
That's a big question.
Okay. What, Marie?
What number is that?
Six.
A request for marriage. What number is that, I think? A request for marriage or...
Request for marriage is what she said.
Oh, I thought she did. What did you say, Deborah?
That's what I said.
She's agreeing with me.
Yeah.
Are you agreeing?
Yes.
I thought you said, what did she say?
No, she said, what Deborah said.
What Deborah said. Did you?
If I had bad grammar, I would ask her. What Deborah said.
Anybody else have a comment about it? The uncovering of the feet was a ceremonial act that was completely proper. It is culturally acceptable. It was a culturally acceptable way for a woman to tell a man that she was willing to marry him. Boaz would have understood the custom and they either accepted or rejected the offer. We're going to find out later what his decision was. Lying by his feet was possibly feet to feet or her head to her his feet. I've given that to you in your handout. One on the left is kind of hard to see because it's so dark. But what is happening is the lady is actually sleeping in the crook of the knee of the leg. I'm sorry.
It wasn't that. It's
just... Okay. That is one thought that may have happened. She's actually using the crook of his knee as a pillow type of thing. Other one is, and this one's real hard to see, the man is actually going northwest where the lady is sort of northeast. And the two legs are intertwined or crossed over or that sort of thing. So there's two or three different ways. This actually could be practiced. I don't know which is right, but I found these two examples. And then I found the artwork to go with it. There is absolutely no contextual suggestion of illicit behavior in Ruth. The Greek Septuagint translates lie or lie down seven times in Ruth 3 with the Greek word koimeo, which means to sleep and is not suggesting a sexual encounter. Translators seem to have no doubt about Ruth's intentions and neither should we. So what was Ruth's request to Boaz?
Marriage. Ask me to marry you.
What's 9 say? You're actually jumping ahead.
Cover me with garment.
Yeah. Verse 9, we were jumping ahead there.
Yes, you're right.
You're on the right track. Spread your cloak over your servant, for you are a near kinsman. What did this signify?
You
need to do your duty and marry me.
Okay. It's actually she is proposing to him. She is actually asking him, by doing this, she is telling him, or asking him to marry her.
But this also means that the firstborn son will not be his son.
Correct. We cover that.
But again, he may not know that he was the kinsman.
Yeah, he did.
We're gonna unpack that.
When he told her?
He knows. When Naomi told Ruth that he was a kinsman.
Right. Did he know?
Verse 12.
So was this a leap year? Women can ask me.
I think it also signified that she was doing things that were proper according to the Jewish way.
Yeah.
She wasn't making, and he even commented, I think it's okay to talk about this because we did read it, that, you know, you didn't go to the younger ones or rich.
That comes up in the next section, but she's going by the book.
Yeah.
And he fully understands what she's doing. So, what was the difference in, basically question number 6, and then question number 7, what was the difference in her lying at his feet, uncovering his feet, and then coming and telling him or asking him to then spread the cloak over her. What was the difference? There's two different things going on here.
Well, the guardian redeemer, sort of his responsibility to take care of anyone in the family that's distressed.
Right, yeah.
And so I took it as lay the cloak over, lay your cloak over me, is take care of me.
Okay.
Coming to you in distress.
Okay.
Not quite
what I was looking for.
Well, he had told her in his field to go, you know, may God give you refuge. And she's coming to him and saying, some of that responsibility for my refuge lies with you. And I think she's calling him on account. That's what Naomi was doing, was calling him on account. Part of this responsibility is yours.
Right, as a kinsman.
Or maybe she's just letting him know, I'm interested, because otherwise he might not think she was.
Bingo, that's what I was looking for. And six, where she's laying beside him and uncovering his feet, what she's doing is saying, I'm ready to get married. Then in question seven, when she asks him to spread the cloak over her, she's saying, will you marry me? In other words, she's getting specifics. First, question number six, so that act was saying, I'm ready to get married. And then when she asked him to cover her up, the cloak, she's saying, will you marry me? Talking to Boaz. So, was this a Sadie Hawkins moment for Ruth? Anybody know what Sadie Hawkins does here?
Yeah, no, it does.
Do you young folks know what Sadie Hawkins is?
I don't.
Okay. Do what?
But
anyway, yeah.
But why didn't it wake him up when she laid down there?
He had too much to drink.
He'd had party because the harvest was
and
over.
And he was exhausted.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it said he was in great spirits. I guess that could mean he'd been drinking, I don't know.
Well, we know. Yeah, he had been eating and drinking. Exactly what verse that is right now.
Seven.
Okay. Yeah, when Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he went to lay down. So it's like Thanksgiving, after a Thanksgiving meal, you know, we all usually eat too much. So what do? We go flop down on the couch and fall asleep. So.
Good time for a woman.
Ball game is on, but we don't watch it.
It's a good time for a proposal.
Yeah. So basically, Ruth is proposing to Boaz. So what did question number eight. Why did Boaz ask a blessing from God for Ruth?
Recognized her character and he wanted her to be rewarded.
Okay. Verse 10, because Ruth had pursued Boaz and not a younger man, was one. Ruth could have ignored Naomi's need and looked for a husband for herself outside of Naomi's relatives, but she was sticking inside the family. What did Boaz say he would do about Ruth's request? Verse 11, all that she asked. What obstacle prevented Boaz from immediately performing the part of a kinsman for Ruth?
Someone else had a closer place in line.
Yeah. If you remember, I think it was last week, we think that Boaz may have been a cousin to Ruth's husband. Which means there was probably an uncle involved or someone.
I figured he was the nephew of the second son, not the nephew of the oldest son. The nephew of the oldest son would have been first.
Right. And you go in pecking order of the generations. Yeah. But
so he was either the nephew of the second brother or he was the second brother of the first son.
Right. Somehow he was very close to Elimelech, which then put him next in line. Do we know who this is by name?
Not from this point.
No, we don't. I don't think we ever find out. We really don't know who it was exactly. You're thinking, Marie. You're thinking out loud.
The genealogy.
Yeah, you can trace it through the genealogy, which we'll talk about next week. Yeah.
Well, you can't trace that because she didn't marry him.
Yeah. Next week she does.
The other brother.
Oh.
The other person who was closer to Ken.
Yeah.
That's right. It's through Boaz. It's not
yeah.
Through we'll talk about genealogy next week. David, you have 13 through 18?
I believe so. Remain tonight, and in the morning, if he will redeem you, good, let him do it. But if he is not willing to redeem you, then, as the Lord lives, I will redeem you. Lie down until the morning. So she lay at his feet until the morning, but arose before one could recognize another. And he said, oh, this is the English Standard Version. And he said, let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor. And he said, bring the garment you were wearing and hold it out. So she held it, and he measured out 6 measures of barley and put it on her. Then she went into the city. And when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, how did you fare, my daughter? Then she told her all the man had done for her, saying, these 6 measures of barley he gave to me. For he said to me, you must not go back empty-handed to your mother-in-law. She replied, wait, my daughter, until you learn how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest, but will settle the matter today.
Okay. So how was Boaz going to determine who would act as kinsman for Ruth? Verse 13.
There's a process.
Yeah, there's a pecking order.
He knew who it was.
Yeah, Boaz knew who was next.
He knew the law well enough. He knew exactly who was next. Yeah.
Yeah. They were probably all living close by.
They all get together every Thanksgiving.
probably more often than that. Yeah.
And not only that, but they also helped each other in the the harvesting and things like that. So
yeah.
Probably would have seen the
this people. Uncle or cousin, whoever it is, they probably worked together or at least worked in a field nearby or whatever. But what would Boaz saying?
One of us is going to do this.
Yeah, either the next of kin is going to do it or I'll do it, basically. So if the first guy didn't do it, then he was assuring her that he would take his place. And we actually really dig and develop that next week, chapter 4. So why did Ruth leave the threshing floor early before anyone could recognize her?
I wanted any scandal.
Exactly. Yeah. Because Boaz had already alluded to the fact that she was a good girl, or a good lady.
Proper lady.
Proper. And like we talked about, like Marie mentioned, there is a Jewish traditional way of doing this, and they stuck pretty well to it. Was this important for her reputation or his reputation?
Both. Yes.
All of them, see again, all of the above. So, yeah, both of them. It protected both of them. What gift did Boaz give Ruth before she left the threshing floor?
A ton of barley.
Yeah.
How much?
It says 6 measures is what NIV says. Do we know how much that was?
No, but she had to be able to carry it.
Exactly, yeah. Some commentaries think it was about 30 kilograms, but they also say, like Marie, it was enough to be considered generous, but yet small enough for her to carry.
It was like a really nice, pretty diamond ring, but not so big as an ostentation.
Maybe not a diamond, but ruby or emerald.
Okay.
Well, to recognize that he was not required to give her anything. He was required to allow her to glean.
Yeah.
So he is going above what was required in the law.
Absolutely. So, what did Naomi ask Ruth when she returned? Verse 16.
How'd it go?
Yeah, how'd it go? She won't know how Boaz acted and what happened. So, verse 18, Naomi was sure that Boaz would resolve the issue by what time? By the end of the day.
She obviously knew him well enough to.
When he said he was going to do something, he did it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he didn't hang around or stick around and put it off. Any other comments, questions about 13 through 18?
Do you think that his eagerness to settle this could have been because he wanted to marry her and was anxious to marry her?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Was it in chapter 2, he was expressing a lot of interest in
her.
He was asking about who she was and where she was from.
He was asking her background,
who
her dad was, her father was, if she was married. Yeah, so see, he's doing his due diligence, obviously. So, as a conclusion, I've listed kind of 5 different areas based on the scripture. Like Ruth, we need to listen to instructions, obey, believe what your Redeemer says, receive his gifts, but we got to wait in patience. So, there's your sermon, Todd. So again, we're going to get allowed a little bit early. Not like Todd, not like some preachers would say, this is only going to last 12 minutes and it goes 35.
Then get practices.
Could get your timing down. Right. Any other comments, questions about chapter 3?
So for my benefit, can we go through their relation again?
Yeah.
I got confused.
You weren't here last week.
I wasn't here last week.
Yeah. So. And that's where we kind of broke that down. Ruth was married to one of Elimelech and Naomi's sons, and he died, and his brother died,
and his daddy died.
And his daddy died while they were in Moab. So Naomi decides to go back to Bethlehem, and you know the story. She tells Ruth and Orpah to go back to their family. Orpah does. Ruth says, no, I'm going wherever you go, I'll go. And that's that famous verse that we talk about.
And Naomi was Elimelech's wife?
Naomi was Elimelech's wife.
Okay.
Yeah. And Ruth was married to their son, one of their sons. They had 2 sons.
So Ruth was the daughter.
Daughter-in-law. Yeah.
So the relationship was Boaz was related to
Elimelech.
Yeah.
Some sort of either, we think a cousin. We think Elimelech may have been Boaz's uncle, which made him a cousin to Ruth's husband, deceased husband. But this first kinsman, we think, may have been a brother to Elimelech, which would have made him
first in line.
Yeah, he was next in line. But
he would have been older then, not younger.
Yeah, he was older than Ruth.
But there are uncles and nephews that are close to the same age.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
In our families, there are.
Yeah. My mom was the baby of 9 children. I've got a first cousin that's 4 years. She's dead now. That was only 4 years younger than my mom. Because she was a daughter of the first child. My mom was the baby. So, you know, there's a big gap in their age.
What was the name for that? A kinsman redeemer?
Yeah. Depends on the translation you look at. Some use kinsman, some use redeemer, and some use guardian. So there's three different words that mean the same thing or refer to the same thing. Good question. And of course, we're going to put it all together next week. They get married and have children, have a child. And
don't tell us.
The rest of
the season. No
spoilers. Probably everybody in here has heard the story at least once.
Why do you think that we don't do that today? You think
do what?
Have kinsmen redeemers. Where do you think that went away?
In Alabama, you can.
Yeah.
You can. In Alabama.
No, I just wondered if that was that a law that God gave people, or?
Leviticus 25.
Yeah, it's part of the Levite law.
Leviticus 25.
So I just wondered what happened to that law. Did it just get nailed to the cross?
Well, the Bible went on, the word of God went on to the Gentiles who did not follow the Levitical law, because if you bind yourself to one part of the law, you bind yourself to all of the law.
Yeah.
And we do not do that because Christ is the answer.
But he was the Lamb of God, right? Which we don't need a Lamb of God unless we've got the Old Testament. That's where we need the Lamb. So he was fulfillment of of the law for Gentiles.
But to the Jews first and also
But remember how Peter and the apostles decided not to bind the Gentiles to the law, like circumcision.
Well, he's cultivating diversity.
Well, I mean, we kept the Ten Commandments, didn't we?
Nope.
We keep the Sabbath.
But we don't have to do anything?
Yes, no.
That's not our law.
Our law is more, is deeper than that.
We talked about that about 4 years ago.
Yeah.
In deep detail.
Okay. All this is a little conversation on incest.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't answer your question. I don't know.
It's a deep question. There is an answer. It's a deep answer.
Yeah, and I'm not prepared. Yeah. I mean, I haven't studied it.
It takes 16 years to answer.
Our culture no longer limits land to stay with the family that originally owned it. We are free to sell all land and transfer back and forth as many times as we want. The Jews were not allowed to do that. The land must stay with that family.
So if you live in Israel today, would they still abide by that?
No, Israel's completely turned over. It was completely...
All records were totally erased as to who originally belonged to the land.
In 71 AD.
Yeah.
So it's no longer a Jewish custom either.
Correct.
Not that I'm aware of.
But they might try to follow a semblance of it. I don't know that part.
I don't know. I'm not bored.
According to the movie, they do follow a semblance of it.
The movie.
There is a movie about that.
A modern movie?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it came out about 12 AD.
It could have been about Ruth.
I know.
No, not about Ruth. About
a modern Ruth.
A brother died, and the younger brother was not married. And according to Jewish custom, since he was unmarried, he was to marry the widow. And he thought, really? I don't want to marry somebody. I don't even know. And then my brother married him. So they fell in love with her and married her anyway.
To some degree, though, it just dawned on me or hit me. Go back to your original question about why we don't have guards or guardians and
kinsmen
and redeemers today. That's now a responsibility of the church, to some degree. Take care of our own. That doesn't completely answer your question.
Remember the widows and fathers.
Right. And if a widow has family, that family's supposed to take care of them. But great comments. Thanks. And next week we'll kind of put it all together, and we'll get Boaz and Ruth together, and hopefully they'll live happily ever after when we get through with them. Y'all have a great week. Have a Merry Christmas. Be safe if you're traveling.
Merry Christmas.
And 5 minutes of 5 minutes.
My point was,
Yeah.